welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling and the latest podcast. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, the former head writer for the WWF and WCW, the former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, which I always say, and it's crazy to say, but it's true. He is Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, welcome back. How you doing?
What is going on, John? How are you doing, man?
Doing good. Let's talk about WWF In Your House 14, Revenge of the Taker, which was held on April 20th, 97 at the War Memorial Auditorium, Rochester, New York. The attendance, 6,477. Pay-per-view buys, 142K. Not too great here. It was interesting. For some reason, some site had it listed as over 11,000 people were there. So I was like, the Rochester, it's not that big. So I looked it up. It only holds 10,000. So yeah, I was like,
I
had to double check. It's 6,000.
For some reason, bro, I do remember that building. I remember that building. I remember going to Poughkeepsie. That was not a big building at all.
So the big thing about this show is, according to your book, Forgiven, this is your first pay-per-view officially as a part of the creative team. What does that mean? And like, as far as, are you the head? Are you just a part of it? Are you a key cog in the wheel?
I don't know, bro. I wish I knew the exact wording, because there was no like team for a while there, bro. At the beginning, it was me, Vince, and Cornette.
Do you know like who put you in that spot? Was it Vince? Like, as far as, hey, we want you part of the creative team.
Originally, it was Bill Watts, but then it was Vince that threw the magazine down and said, this is what our show needs to be. And that's when he shuffled the old guard out and started easing me into it.
Were they doing that bad, as far as you know, financially?
I could tell you, John, without a shadow of a doubt, they were in the red. That's why I got my opportunity. Vince didn't know what else to do. He was surrounded by the same guys, the Pritchards, the Pat Pattersons, all those guys, and they were doing the same thing, and business kept going down and down and down and down.
So how do your duties change? What were you doing, and then now what are you doing?
When I was writing the television, I was still doing a magazine. I was still doing both jobs.
As far as producing, were you still producing the guys, writing their verbiage and stuff?
Absolutely.
So Vince is giving you extra responsibilities, extra stuff. Does he give you extra pay?
Bro, I was not making what wrestlers made. But bro, I'll never forget, man. Like, man, I wish I could remember the exact amount, but I can't. I remember once I was just on an elevator with Vince, and this is when we're really starting to take off, right? And I was on the second floor. Vince was on the fourth floor. So I remember I was getting off at the second floor, and he was continuing to go up to the fourth floor, and he gave me an envelope. All he said was something to the effect of, this is for you, pal. And going in my office, opening up the envelope, bro, I want to say it was 50 grand.
Oh my God.
Because it was an oh my God moment. It really was. Bro, I started at the WWE. I'll never forget. I got hired as editor of the magazine for 60 grand. When I left, bro, I think I was making 350.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so that was never, ever, ever an issue. I mean, he paid me really well.
So here, WCW is kicking your ass. I mean, they got the NWO and stuff. Is that also a part of the decision of why he wants you to be writing? It's like, man, we keep getting our ass kicked. We're doing the same old thing. We need a new writer. We need somebody in here to refuse.
Absolutely, bro. He didn't know what to do. He knew everything they were doing was not working. He knew Bruce Pritchard's of the world and that old guard, Jim Cornette's. They were going to keep recycling the same wrestling crap. He had no choice, bro. What did he have to lose? If it didn't work out, he would have just put me back on the magazine. So he really didn't know what to do, but he knew he needed to do something.
So now you're part of the team?
I am part of a team here. Because I kind of still am a little on the outskirts where I'm contributing, but I am not sitting down with Vince and writing the entire show. That really didn't start till Cornette exited. When I tell you I'm writing 100% of the show, I'm writing 100% of the show. But it did not start that way. It was a gradual move me into that.
Okay, let's get right into the show.
The dark match, the Sultan with Iron Sheik defeated Flash Funk.
Yeah, see, that tells you right there, bro. The Sultan ain't going to be a Vince Russo character. Everybody will know that.
What about Sheiky Baby?
Sheiky Baby was great to have around, but the Sultan was something I inherited.
So the first match is the LOD, Hawk and Animal, defeating Owen Hart and British Bulldog, who were the tag team champions, by DQ. So Owen and Bulldog retain. The match goes about 12 minutes, 15 seconds. Brett interferes and helps get the DQ. And the LOD actually thought they were going to win the titles for a second, did not, but that'll play a part for later on. This didn't really click as well. It's weird. LOD, Owen, Bulldog, you expect some awesome match, but it wasn't as good as I was hoping it was going to be.
Yeah, on paper, it sounds like it should be a good match.
The thing with Owen and the Bulldog, too, remember they were a little miscast? Clarence Mason was kind of flirting around with, not at this point, but at one point. So yeah. It's funny. It's like trying to get certain guys creatively in the right spots, like, because you could have all this great talent, but if they're not in the right creative spot, it's like a waste.
Bro, there are so many talents on the WWE roster that were at some point more over than they are now. That should never happen. The talent should not be coming down. And there are so many people on their roster now that at one point were at better spots. And now they've just been drugged down. That should not be happening.
I agree. So then the next match, this is obviously definitely not you writing too, because it's the part of the Nation Domination, but Savio Vega with Crush, Farouk, JC Ice, Wolfie D, D'Lo Brown, and Clarence Mason defeated Rocky Maivia by a countout. So Rocky Maivia retains his Intercontinental Championship. Match goes 8 minutes, 30 seconds. Not great here, but a lot of interference here from this random group. I always like laugh thinking about this group. Like, who thought like Savio, Crush, Farouk, PG-13, D'Lo, and Clarence Mason would be a good fit together?
Bruce.
Really? Why? I don't even get it.
I don't know, bro.
So you got a Spanish guy, the white guy, the black guy, but then two other white guys and a random. You know what I mean? It's, I don't like. How is that the Nation of Domination? It doesn't really fit.
I have no idea. Bro, while I'm working there, I'm asking the same things while they're putting this shit together.
I don't know, just weird. But also, obviously, we were saying Rocky Maivia. You knew that didn't work either, right? I mean, he was so corny.
Yeah, no, I mean, bro, you're seeing that now. You're seeing a replay of that now, bro. You're seeing the same thing now. That's how wrestling people write a show.
So the next matchup here is two of your favorites. Jesse James defeats Rockabilly, Billy Gunn with the Honky Tonk Man in about
7 minutes.
Rockabilly, come on, bro. Like, you see what I'm talking about? I mean, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Jesse James and Rockabilly.
What do you think about Rockabilly?
Horrible.
So you're probably well aware of this, and I don't know if you were part of this, but remember Disco got fired from WCW because he wouldn't job to Jackie?
I was trying to get Disco hired.
So he was going to be with the Honky Tonk Man, correct?
I did not know Disco from a hole in the wall at that point. I just thought he was very talented over at WCW. So I have a conversation with Bruce. This is telling you the positioning right now. I'm under Bruce at this point. So I got to go to Bruce and I got to say, bro, the Honky Tonk Man, this, that, and the other thing. So typical wrestling, bro, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Bruce has a conversation with Disco and Bruce didn't like some of the answers Disco gave him to his questions. So that was the end of that. That's how it works, bro. That's how guys get cock blocked. I did not work that way. If you were going to help us, I did not care what my personal views or opinions were. If I thought you were going to help us, I was going to convince Vince to bring you in.
Disco doesn't make it in, so we get Rockabilly instead. I mean, I just talk about not fitting. Oh, my God.
That's Bruce. That's all Bruce, bro. And where is Bruce today?
WB. Doing creative, I guess, still with Triple H.
Who knows? Now, Bruce is a great producer, probably the best producer I've ever seen. But coming up with original content and original characters, bro, you're talking about Who, you're talking about Freddie Joe Floyd, you're talking about The Goon, you're talking about T.L. Hopper. This is all under his umbrella.
It's funny, he's like hitting the Mendoza line. He had Kane, right? Oh, that's a great one. And then
Kane was like, great. Keep this in mind, bro. He didn't write for Kane.
Right, but he thought up the idea.
Yes, but if he would have written for Kane, bro, you could have seen something completely different. I always give him credit for it, but he was not writing that shit week for week.
And the funny thing is here, Jesse James is, they call him the real Double J, making fun of Jared. So, I don't know, to me, like, Honky Tonk Man with Billy Gunn also, it's like, what are you, just trying to get Honky Tonk Man out there? It's like, makes no sense.
I don't know, unless maybe the guy was down on his luck and really needed a payday, and maybe he went to Vince.
Billy Gunn and Honky Tonk Man? I don't know, just square peg, round hole, whatever you want to say, just doesn't fit at all.
Yeah.
That seems to be the theme of a lot of WWF at this point, and probably why WWE kicking your ass.
Absolutely, bro. And I say this all the time, too, with the current product. There are so many people miscasted.
Oddly enough here, the show is called Revenge of Taker, but he's not in the main event. So Undertaker, who's the world champion, defends the title against Mankind with Paul Bearer. Undertaker wins pretty damn good match here in about 17 minutes, 30 seconds. Why wasn't he a part of the main event?
I don't know, bro. The only thing I could think of is, a lot of people don't realize this, when you come up with those posters and the names of the pay-per-views and all that crap, it's like 3 to 6 months prior. So it could be that things changed over those 3 months. That's what I would think.
After Taker wins, he then throws a fireball in Paul Bearer's face, just for good measure. It's funny to think, because JR always tells a story that when he first hired Mick, Vince is like, you're going to be upset when I fire him. You know what I mean? Like, right. He had no faith in him. And JR was like, trust me, JR kind of knows what he's talking about.
No doubt, bro. When JR would hand me the talent roster, I second guessed nothing. Every person on this roster earned the position. That's how much respect I had for JR and his job. I never questioned why is the talent on the... I did all the time at TNA. I used to go to Dixie all the time and say, so-and-so will never get over. I don't know why you're wasting your money. He will never get over. I never once said that to JR.
So the main event of the evening, Stone Cold Steve Austin defeats Bret Hart by DQ in about 21 minutes. This was a match to determine the number one contendership for the WWF title. Not as good as WrestleMania, but pretty damn good match. Bulldog interferes, and that kind of causes the DQ. So earlier, Bret helped him. He now helps Bret, but Austin gets the win and is number one contender. Why DQ finish here?
That's them again, because I'm asking the same thing. Did Austin ever get his win back over Bret?
So here by DQ.
Yeah, but not by pinning him?
No, because remember they have the match on Raw 2, and Austin beats the shit out of him, throws him in the ambulance, and destroys him. Technically, he wins, but he didn't pin him, though.
They definitely were using that first match to set up the run-in. Bro, a lot of times, like, that's their way of protecting Bret. But yeah. I don't think losing a great match, a hard-earned match to Steve Austin, I don't think that's going to hurt Bret in any way, shape, or form.
I always thought it was weird, too, because Austin could have pinfall victory. Yeah, I know Bret eventually at SummerSlam is going to win the title, but I always thought, like, wow, he could have really used that pin. I mean, technically beats him twice, but he doesn't really beat him.
Bro, I agree with that 100%. They use formulas. That's the problem, bro. They can't get out of these formulas. And then they go on for so long that they become tiresome. And it goes round and round and round and never goes anywhere.
So to end the show, really, Owen and Bulldog are trying to beat up Austin. Austin chases them off. He hits Bret with a chair. He's really targeting the knee. He applies the sharpshooter. The officials have to pull Austin off of Brett because he's going to like literally kill him. So it's almost like the reversal of what happened at WrestleMania, except right. for now Austin has him in the sharpshooter and he's not letting go. So
yeah.
good stuff by them too. But you're continuing on with Austin Brett. I wonder if that was in the cards for future that he was going to finally get his big win over Brett.
It probably was, bro, because of, like I said, how long they were stretching stuff out. So it probably was, bro. I mean, to give them the benefit of the doubt, it very well could be, but just never got to that point because of what happened with Brett.
So this is an interesting thing that always happened with the In Your House shows. They have dark matches after the show goes off the air, off the main event, because I guess people are there. They want them there for, because In Your House is basically 2 hours. Let's give them 3 hours. Doug Furness and LaFon defeated the Godwins, and then Hunter Hearst Helmsley defeated Goldust. That match goes 20 minutes. So, I mean, they're going home, but that's what they're going home on, not yeah. necessarily what we're seeing at home. It's I don't know. I guess it's a weird strategy, but I get, you know, they're taping it for other reasons, and I guess they're giving people
it's still their a little weird worth. Though, bro. Because
yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, you're gonna have a flat crowd after Brett and Austin.
That's almost like okay, we get Austin and Brett, the two best guys, and then we get, and a Goldust, Triple H are good, but at that point, 97, it's like the highest of highs, and it's like okay, we're going yeah. back to the mid card. It's weird.
It's very, 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 very weird, bro. There's a way to set up a card.
Yeah. And
it's supposed to crescendo, bro. Like, that's how a card should crescendo. A television show should crescendo. Build. They don't even know how to do that. I mean, they don't even know how to format a show the right way, bro.
So do you like where you're headed here with this show? At least some of it, like Austin and Brett, at least, or no?
Yeah, no, bro. Like, I'd say Austin, Brett, maybe Undertaker, Mick, but there are so many characters that either we have to kill or either yeah. we have to reposition them and put them in their proper spots. And that's going to take time, bro. That's not going to take a week.
All right, let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check the website, tmptempire.com. Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. Vince, what do you got?
Yeah, guys, you can check out russosbrand.com, and that's under the channel attitude.com umbrella. And then we got separate shows on patreon.com/russotwc.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week on the podcast. See you next time, folks.
Uh-oh. He's not finished with him yet.
The Undertaker, hoping to polish off mankind, scoops him up.
Uh-oh.
And ready for the tour.
The Undertaker just drilled mankind. Tombstone. Yeah.
Defended the World Wrestling Federation Championship here tonight in what we thought was going to be, and certainly was, a brutal encounter. Absolutely brutal.
And now it's Paul Bearer's turn. It's Paul Bearer's yeah. turn.
Yes, you're right. You're right, Paul Bearer.
No way!
There's no escape. Undertaker has him.
Get away, Paul! Run away! Run away!
Paul Bearer!
It's a good thing Paul Bearer's wearing a dark suit.
And Undertaker.
Get out of the ring.
Paul Bearer. Down on the steel. Undertaker now is going to polish them both off. He's going to finish this thing once and for all.
Take him back, Undertaker. Take him back.
Wait a minute.
Oh, wait a minute then. Paul Bearer now with the Undertaker. And Paul being hammered. Undertaker and Paul Bearer is right over there, and Undertaker continues to just hammer away on both men.
What's he got?
I don't know.
Look at this, Paul Bearer. Paul is in trouble.
Paul Bearer and Mankind came here to take the WWF Championship, ladies and gentlemen. Wait a minute. Looked like the Undertaker, whatever that was, ignited in his hands, and I'm not so sure Paul Bearer or Mankind didn't bring it.
I think Mankind brought that into the ring. Somebody's got to help Paul Bearer.
We said before that the Undertaker, certainly in a vengeful attitude coming into this match, but sort of wonder whether or not that was called for.
Smell that?
I smell it. It stinks.
Shoot.
You smell that?
Smells like the Undertaker's hands are burning.
I'm not so sure the Undertaker can appreciate what he has actually done.
Today's episode of the Pozcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.